podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Well, hello there.
Hello.
And welcome to WTA Weekly. First of all, I don't think I could possibly live up to that intro. Sorry, just have a hope of living up to that intro. It's Kira Hancock. Kira, how are you doing?
That's very nice. Thank you, Nick. I'm very well, thank you. It's been such a long time since I've seen you.
It's been a while. I mean, I think we did a commentary together at some point.
At some point. It slips my mind.
Yeah, at some point. First of all, I would like to formally apologise to our viewership for being very late. I have no excuse. I do have excuses.
You have excuses.
They don't matter. Not when we have tennis to talk about. And, well, I think Fakiha in the chat is going to be very, very happy because she's asking us to talk a lot about Iga, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Because you have the benefit, wonderful viewers, of having two Iga Świątek fans on WTA Weekly. Which, typically speaking, when I've done this show before, it's been a fellow as someone who's very had a strong admiration for Świątek, but maybe their fandom lies elsewhere. Very commonly, will be with an Arina Sabalenka fan. That's always fun. For those of you who are less enthusiastic about Świątek, I make no apologies. we are here. This is the day after Iga Świątek has won her second Indian Wells title, eighth Masters 1000? Definitely 19th career title.
I think it's eighth.
Yeah, which is fourth highest amongst active players, which according to Vanch is like the three ahead of her are all nearing retirement.
Yes. So,
let's talk about it. So let's start with the final. What was your summary of what Iga Świątek did in that final?
Dominance, pure and simple. It was dominance. It was obviously in that first set, she goes 3-love up, and then it's sort of a little bit of, you know, falters, Sakkari back in it. You think, oh, maybe we have got a final on our hands. But I still think when it got to 4-all, everyone could feel, right, well, Iga's going to hold here and then break to win the set. That felt really obvious to me. I don't know about you. So I think she, obviously then the second set, 6-love, she's com- it was just complete dominance. She played, I think, the best tennis of the tournament, which I think she did every single match. As she went along, it got better and better. She got more and more comfortable. And Sakkari, who'd had a brilliant tournament so far, unfortunately, just didn't seem to show up. And that's what it felt like. But I think it was far more that Świątek was just so dominant that she didn't get a look in.
Yeah, I think Sakkari did rattle Świątek for two games.
Yeah.
When she broke back, when he went 3-love up, Sakkari held at 3-1, broke for 3-2, held for 3-all, and then Iga locked down on serve after that point. And she adjusted to what Sakkari was throwing at her, because Sakkari loosened up and was really swinging for it. And there were a couple of rounds where, like, they're fairly even. And Iga just found a way to, okay, good on you. You've raised your level. We're dealing with a different Sakkari here. I can live with this.
Yeah. Absolutely. She just sort of immediately adjusted to the new level Sakura's bringing and was like, okay, yeah, fine. This is completely fine with me. I'm going to get on with my game again. So,
and this was a vintage Iga performance. The forehand produced some amazing shots. Yeah, there were a couple of misfires again during that middle first set period, but those went away quite quickly. The backhand was super solid. Yeah. The return, that was key. She was really getting everything Sakkari serving, playing Sakkari serving okay. There was a lot to praise her for. I guess my question is, was that I said vintage Iga, does this feel like 2022 Iga again?
It did to me, because I think 2022 Iga I would watch and feel quite comfortable. Don't know about you, I would watch Iga in 2022 and be like, yeah, she's got this, I'm not worried. And I think last year I was worried quite a lot. So this week in general, I would say, has slowly, as it's gone on, I've got more and more comfortable watching it. It feels sort of inevitable when she steps on the court, as she did yesterday, that she's going to take it. And I thought it was very impressive.
Yeah, it was super impressive. I agree with you in that as the tournament went on, I felt a lot more secure about Iga. I mean, I was nervous before every match, but then the start of this final was I settled down pretty quickly as a fan. Did get a little annoyed with her at points, but the 6-love set was vintage, like classic Iga second set. Once she won that first set, I had no doubt she was going to win the match.
Wow. 70-0 when she wins the first set now.
Indeed. Which is insane. That is such a cool stat. Similar throughout the tournament. Like, I think Collins and Noshkova were a little nervy to start with, especially going a break down to Noshkova in the way that she did, and almost a double break. And then pulling that back was like 11 games in a row, like not giving Noshkova a look in.
Yeah.
Wozniacki, I didn't feel like she was getting much of a threat. I think Iga, once she got going, was going to push through that. And then, yeah, Kostyuk and Putintseva were not threatening at all. Kostyuk did not threaten as much as I thought she was going to be honest.
Exactly the same. It was before the Kostyuk match that I was like, oh, this one could be trickier. I still thought she'd come through, having seen the tennis she was playing, but I definitely thought it'd be trickier, and it just wasn't. And that was sort of, for me, the moment where I was like, right, okay, yeah, she's locked in here.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Like, I'm still yet to shake off the 2023 sort of nerves before an Iga match, but hey, we're coming to clay soon. That's going to start fading.
Yeah, hopefully that'll settle us down a bit on clay. But I feel pretty settled now, actually. Yeah.
I mean, we've got to get through Miami first. I mean, we are going to do a Miami preview. Iga in Miami, she didn't play last year, so is undefeated at the minute. Is that something that we should be make us optimistic, or do we need to be realistic given the surface is going to be a little quicker?
I'm going to be realistic for once. I know we talked yesterday about only bringing positivity, but I'm going to be realistic. I don't see her doing the double this year. Just because of, the surface, like you said, winning the Indian Wells surface. She didn't play last year, so it might take her a few more games. But on the other hand, I would say she's got a kinder draw than she did in Indian Wells here. Overall, obviously...
She's got Noshka in round three again.
Noshka again, yes, apart from that one. But obviously, after the sort of wobble at the beginning of the first set of that one, she did make quick work of her. So I don't know if that is as much of a sort of nervy match as it might have been previously.
We've been reminded that Anna Konyu beat Iga Swiatek in 2021. So yeah, technically not undefeated in Miami, but I mean, like, on a run. And, you know, closer the tournament has got to defending champion, given Petra Kvitova is on maternity leave.
Yes, very true.
But going back to that, okay, so we've got an element of realism in here, but in terms of the current state of play in the WTA, is Iga Swiatek now the undisputed number one?
I know we're biased, but take that away for a minute. And I would say, unbiased as I can be, I think yes, personally. I do think maybe we need to see how she gets on in the slams this year to really feel confident in saying undisputed number one. I think Sabalenka can be so dangerous in slams, as we know, very consistent in slams, as we know. If Sabalenka wins three out of the four slams this year, for example, then we might need to talk again. But if we can see how Swiatek gets on in the slams, then I think we can pretty comfortably say she's undisputed.
Is it frustrating as an Iga fan? Maybe a leading question with this, because the answer for me is yes. Is it frustrating for an Iga fan where she is definitely favourite at least 6 out of 9 1,000s? No, there's 10 1,000s now. 7 out of 10, 6 or 7 of the 1,000s. And but her advantage in the slams is minimal at 3 out of 4 of them. Ginormous at one of them.
Huge. Yeah. Yes, it's frustrating, I think. Partly for me as a fan, because slams will always lead the conversation amongst the majority of people. And however well somebody does in the Masters, obviously top talking tennis pods perhaps might talk a lot about that. But in terms of the general feeling around players, if you're not going to do well in the slams, people aren't going to think you're going to have a good season. And I think that can be really frustrating when you know what sort of tennis she's playing, for her not to compete as well as we might like in those slams, or not to be favourite, or whatever that might be. Is it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's a frustrating, but at the same time, you know, when she's on, like when she's there and she's playing on a court that's like even medium speed, she's got an advantage. What is it actually? Sure, this is an opportunity to kind of talk about this. What is it that made you an Iga fan?
For me, not only was it, obviously her tennis is incredible. So that's like non-issue. She's brilliant at tennis. Full stop, done. Yeah, okay. But there's a lot of good people at tennis. For me, it's more her as a person. As a fan, I really obviously can appreciate a lot of the top tennis players. They've all got some great personalities. But for me, I resonate with Iga the most. As I put in my article about her being an introvert, that's something that I don't see a lot in the sort of top sports personalities across lots of sports. I'm sure we can all name some, but I don't see it loads. And it really sort of means a lot to me to see somebody sort of quiet, introverted, reflective, who's at the very, very top of a sport and sort of a figurehead, but doing it in her own way, not trying to conform to how other people might take on that role.
Yeah, Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, she, and there is definitely that sense of she does things her own way.
Yeah.
And she's so focused on the sport. And I honestly think she probably, I think every tennis player eats, sleeps and breathes tennis, but she's literally made it the center of everything, pretty much. Like it's a military operation. I mean, for me, it was the tennis that won me.
I was going to say, is it,
that, the forehand, that forehand, the way it plays, with the baseline and those fine margins between in and out, just heart and the mouth every single time. Yeah. The backhand is such a solid shot that can do so much.
The backhand down the line did contribute for me as well. I will put that shot in there.
That the Murray fan coming in there.
Yeah, it might be.
But yeah, I think I realized I was an Iga fan because, like, I think I was watching her during the US Open 2021 because I'd watched her win Roland Garros in 2020. I was like, okay, this kid's good. I'm impressed. And I think more I watched over the course of the year, it's like, there's something about her, and I don't know what it's just the way she plays tennis. I don't know what it is. And then I just realized that the way I felt about watching her play tennis was the same way I used to feel watching Roger Federer play.
Yeah, I can see it.
And even though they don't play similar games.
No, not at all. But feeling.
Yeah, the sort of inventiveness and that sort of heart in the mouth and that sort of how did you do that moment?
Yeah.
That's it. And actually, we were talking about forehands and backhands, and that reminds me of a point I was going to go back to from the final. We talked about sort of vintage Iga 2022.
Sorry, I'm laughing at the football on the screen.
Why are we talking about this? Is there any opportunity for the Manchester United fan to gloat?
Wow. Low blow. This is a tennis show. I was told.
apparently, but next thing you're going to do is just pop up with a copy of his book. I don't see a copy of the book, John. I think there is, we talked about vintage 2022 Iga. I do think there was an element with that final and actually through the tournament that wasn't there as much in 2022, or was, but I think she's improved it. There's a definite improvement, and that's the serve.
Yes. Yeah, good point.
The serve was... Yeah, I made a different comment about Iga serve busting, but genuinely there were so many serves that weren't coming back in the final. There were so many serves that over the course of the tournament that like got her out of trouble and kept her solid from like being broken again or going down. And that we weren't seeing that even almost at the beginning of this year in Australia.
Yeah.
Maybe more towards the end of last year in that Beijing WTA finals run, but... that's why maybe apart from the fact that 2022 was just ludicrously good, you can't say this is the same player. And actually I think a question I would have wanted to ask Zachary was discernible difference between in playing Świątek 2022 versus playing Świątek 2024, same location?
That would have been a great question. Why did nobody ask her that?
Because Anastasia wasn't at the press conference. I don't know.
That'll be it. Yeah, I think you're right. I really agree with you because I don't know about you, but instinctively, when I think of Iga, I don't think of her as someone whose serve can get her out of trouble. My instinct would be that's not something I often see from her. But like you say, in this tournament, I definitely think saw more of that. And you're right, WTA finals, that sticks in the mind as a time that she did as well, but not so much at the start of this year. I think if she keeps developing that, who knows indeed.
Well, we've spent about 20 minutes talking about Iga Świątek, which I think is fair enough.
I think that's fair
for the episode, and we'll try and rein in a little bit more for future episodes if we are paired together again on WTA Weekly.
We'll try.
Okay. One of us will try.
Yes, that's good.
We'll take it in turns. But I've mentioned Zachary and sort of the question we'd have answered to ask her, but obviously Zachary, runner up again, And I guess my question would be, obviously first tournament with David Witt in the coaching box, has he made a noticeable difference? And if so, how?
Oh, good question. I'm sure there's a lot of tennis stuff, and that's what I'm going to call it, tennis stuff.
We're not experts, people. Sorry.
Let's put a disclaimer out there. Not experts. Tennis stuff that you could say about Sakkari, and I will leave that to your very capable hands. For me, the biggest thing in Sakkari's game the last year, to me, when I've watched it, has always been confidence. I think she's a total confidence player. And when she's not feeling confident, everything seems to go wrong for her. And when she is feeling confident, she brings that to the court and she plays brilliant tennis. I know you'd say that about most tennis players. I think for her, even more so, if she's not feeling confident, I don't think she's able to pull something out of the bag like some other players might be able to. You know, Coco can have a bad day and still get through a round. I don't think Sakkari has that at the moment. What I've seen from her this week is that confidence that we're used to, that sack attack, if you like, that I think's been missing. Obviously, you saw glimpses of it last August and September with that Washington, making the Washington final, winning Guadalajara. But it was really missing from her last year. And I think if she can bring in a new coach to just sort of inject some more confidence into her game, obviously there's plenty of tennis stuff that she can work on as well. But for me, I think that confidence is the biggest thing that I've seen sort of changing.
Yeah, it's the confidence that gets her deep in tournaments, to get her into positions to compete with the top four. And, you know, that was a good win against Goff. I woke up to seeing lots of good reactions to that match, apparently being quite interesting. I liked what she was trying against Świątek. Well, I say liked. I appreciated what she was doing. Against Świątek in that final. And, you know, there's no doubt when she's going for it, it's really, really good tennis. Mm-hmm. The question is, can she, you know, how is she against the very, very best? Now, she beat Goff, but when she's had a good week, she's usually run into Sabalenka or Świątek. And the gap between her and them, the tennis stuff, then comes into play.
Yes, I do recognise the part that tennis stuff has to play here. Just putting that out there. But yes, it definitely does. What can I ask, if you don't mind? I was going to ask you, what do you think, taking off your Iga Świątek hat, what do you think Sakkari would have needed to do yesterday?
Eager to play worse.
this is what I wondered. Yeah,
I can't, like, okay, she did try to rush the forehand a little bit, but like Witt kept on going to tell you to go to the backhand, and I was like, that's not a shot that breaks down as easily. I mean, you might be able to get more from a backhand that you can do more with, but if she has, maybe she should have run around the backhand and hit more forehands, Sakkari. But she's great off both wings, as Vance would say. So I guess, yeah, there were a few tactical things that may have made it closer, but honestly I think it would have taken a dip in level from Iga to bring the match around. And I would say the same if that was a Sabalenka match as well, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's what I was wondering, whether you'd say the same. I agree that I'm not sure. Even if Sakkari, I think Sakkari obviously got to a point where she was making a lot of errors as well in the second set, which was a shame, you know, in terms of the level of tennis. But even before that, I think Sakkari at her best would have struggled against Iga's level yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. I think most players at their best would have struggled to play with Iga yesterday. And I'm including Arena and Elena in that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would have been interesting to see her play Sabalenka at that level. I think she would. I think she would. Rybakina, I feel quite comfortable with the level she would have played yesterday, beating Elena at the moment. But I would have liked to see a top Sabalenka against Iga yesterday.
That's not going to impress Schwarna and Lerlan in the chat, who have been extolling the virtues of Rebecca now whilst we've been talking.
Sorry, everyone. I really love Elena's tennis. I just don't see it at right now. Just right now, I'm talking
at
about.
This point, yeah.
At this very moment.
So there we go. That's That's Sakkari in a good place, but yeah, she couldn't have done a lot with that, and clearly Iga was the star of the show, as that this lucky person, I don't know who she is sharing a photo with her, got lucky enough to get a photo with her after the trophy.
Yeah, what a nice thing for Iga to find a random fan and you know, bring her up to have a photo with the trophy. It's really nice of her, actually, I think.
Camera kept cutting to her during the match. I'm not sure why. I think her boyfriend.
Maybe she chose it before the match for photos.
I think we better stop before people think we're being serious. Anyway. Yes,
very possible.
That Zendaya has some class and enjoys some tennis. Something I like to do on WTA Weekly is just talk about some of the other stories outside of the final. And first of all, I'd like to go with the semi-finalists. I'm going to start with Marta Kostyuk. Yes, that's one semi-finalist, John. I mean, the tennis semi-finalist. But anyway.
Wow, this is getting really personal. I'm feeling attacked.
I don't know why he's doing this to two people who like Liverpool. Maybe that's just fueling him.
I'm sure it is.
Actually, I'm more of a Klopp fan than a Liverpool fan. But anyway.
I respect that.
Marta Kostyuk. Three times this season, already in 2024. Her 2024 this year has already been way better than the entirety of 2023.
Yes.
She's been one match away from a really significant result. Like, don't get me wrong, what she's got to so far, like first Grand Slam quarterfinal, Masters semifinals, those are good. Those are solid. That's a good player standard. But obviously she was one match away from making a semifinal of a slam, winning a 500, one match from making a Masters 1000 final. And for me, the reason why I'm saying that is I think to be in like the elite level, which I appreciate is probably going to be quite a big group, you have to win five consecutive matches or thereabouts at 500 level or above.
Yes.
For me. Would you say that with these results so far, how close is she to leveling up and getting that even bigger breakthrough that she's fallen one short of? And are we going to see that in 2024?
Kostyuk's a difficult one. She's just this week made a new career high, I think, hasn't she, of 26, which is obviously really good. I think she'll be wanting to break into that top 20 this year. She might be hoping to break into that top 10 this year. We don't know. I would say I don't see her breaking into the top 10 this year. I certainly see her breaking into the top 20. I could see her winning a 500. I struggle to see which Masters she would take. I struggle to see her taking that step, like you say, into that sort of breakthrough moment. She's got so close a few times and you wonder whether those were some really decent chances and she might struggle to maintain that going forward, or she might use it and use it to fuel her. I think top 20 this year. You know, she's got some great wins before she came across a very strong Iga this week. So I think if she can continue sort of along those lines with the semi-finals, maybe some finals, hopefully maybe a 500. That's where I see her this year.
I think that would be a good season for Marta. Top 20 is really, really hard to break into at the minute. And I think she's definitely capable of it. I guess for when we're talking about that draw question of getting that extra round further in these events, be it, you know, semis, finals, winning a 500. Who has she got to beat to achieve that? That's the thing. I think she may be a little bit unfortunate that she got Katie Bolter in the week of her life in San Diego to a certain extent. But her other losses have been to Coco Gauff and Iga Świątek. And I guess it's going to come down to, is Marta Kostyuk going to become one of those potential banana skin players for that top four?
It's hard to see that at the moment for me. I'd love to see her breakthrough in that way. Right now, I don't. Obviously, she struggled more against Świątek than we expected, I think. And I sort of struggle to see her being difficult at the moment for Sabalenka or Rybakina. See, I do like Rybakina. But yes, I think she could possibly trouble Coco more at the moment. If she's going to beat someone to get that next step, she might need to be Coco in the draw, possibly, for me.
Mm. Speaking of Coco, the other semi-final.
Great segue there.
Oh, yes. The king of the segues. They see me rolling on my segue to reference that Weird Al song from a long time ago.
It's a good song.
It's a good song. I'm glad you got the reference, which is appreciated. Not everyone does. Coco, much has been made about her progress through the Indian Wells draw. Opening round, nearly lost. Yes. Rescued it. Much decent against Bronzetti, bit patchy in the second set. Clearly the better player against Mertens, clearly the better player against Yuan. And then Sakkari happened, and that was a really, really competitive match that Gauff prevented from being a straight setter. And there was a lot of it was made of like, oh, Coco got there, not necessarily showing an amazing level, but does it matter how she wins as long as she's getting wins?
For me, absolutely not. I do not care how people win a match. I think those like hard slogs where you're not playing your best and you find a way to win somehow, as she did, I think, twice in this tournament, Coco. I think that's really impressive for me personally. I suppose part of that comes back to my interest in the mental side of the game as a whole, because I think it's really interesting to see someone really struggle. You know, like, was it 17 double faults she hit in the match against Yuan?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, which is insane. When you see the scoreline, when she's clearly the better player, to hit 17 double faults, and she was so angry with herself in that match. I don't know if you saw at the end, you know.
Catch that one.
No, she, at the end of that match, you know, she just won it, got through to the semis, and she just looked unhappy because of, you know, all the struggles on serve. But I think in a way, you know, that's just as helpful to you as a building block and as a training exercise and as a stepping stone to getting better and better, as a really dominant win like Świątek maybe had. I think this might do just as much for Coco.
Yeah, I agree. I think, look, if you want to see the moment we knew Gauff had an amazing mental side, mental game, it was that Wimbledon breakthrough in 2019 as a 15-year-old. First of all, she puts away Venus Williams, her hero.
Yeah.
And then in the third round, she saves match points against Polona Hutsok and grinds it out. She was not playing well in that match, and she somehow won it. That is, for me, that was the moment I went, okay, this kid's special. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, that's kind of what Coco's known for, scrapping it out, grinding it out. And I don't think I've ever watched a Coco match. Please, if there's any Coco fans in the chat, please tell me about a match where this has happened, because I fully believe it could have, but I haven't seen it because I can't watch all the tennis matches. If there's a match that Coco has ever won by absolutely blowing away her opponent, just not doing much wrong, out hitting them. Certainly in the big events that I've watched, I've not seen that happen.
I was just thinking about that. I can't, obviously the scoreline against Mertens is really strong, but I watched that one and I didn't think
in that match.
I didn't think Mertens was really competing very much in that. So,
So that's kind of my series. I think out of the top four, who do I trust? I think actually Coco's the one I trust the most to win when not at her best.
Yeah.
Actually.
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah. Of all of them, I think if you've got all four of them playing badly, Coco's going to win. Just for that sheer sort of ability to find a way to win, even when she's not at her best. But for you, would you say you don't mind people kind of scrapping out those wins, or do you?
No. Win's a win. Like, for me, a win is winning matters more. Winning and momentum is the most important factor in tennis. I don't care about peak level. Well, I do care about peak level. Peak level is great in theory, but no one plays at that all the time, not even Iga. So it's like, okay, well, are you going to get the wins? And I think when I do my predictions for slams and things like that, I look at who's been winning the most recently and who's most comfortable at those tournaments.
Yeah.
That's for me, it's like wins at that specific event in history, wins leading up to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Momentum is a big word in tennis, I think. And it doesn't just work within tournaments. I think it can happen over an entire season.
Now, I think there was a conversation that happened between Damien, John and Vance at the end of a live stream about this a while ago. And I did catch it. There was a discussion where John is of the view that Coco is not in the same league as the other three of the top four, which is Świątek, Sabalenka, Rybakina. She's kind of on her own little island. Vance is of the view that she's in the same group. Before I kind of share where I'm at, so I don't influence you, do you think Coco belongs in the same group as those three? Are they a top four or is it a top three plus one?
So I hate the whole big three, big four.
I don't want to go big three, big four. They need
no,
to
that's fine. You did say top, so that's fine. No. I did notice you said
they
top.
Need to be consistent for a couple of years before we can start calling them a big three.
Exactly. So, and all of this, there's a lot of Twitter talk at the moment about big three, big four, and whatever. I've got no interest. But for me, in terms of top four, like you said, so yeah, I think Coco's on the same level as the three. For me personally, I don't see her being a level below. And certainly for me, I see the top four, and then for me, a big gap to the rest of the field.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, Jake is of the view that Coco's the best of the rest. I think Coco's in the top four.
Yeah.
I think Coco's in the top four. I think, does she have the same kind of weaponry as the other three players? No.
Yep.
But she has the defense and athleticism, the speed that even, like, again, you know, quicker than even Iga. I think that she's demonstrated that in a head-to-head with the other three, she can be Iga on the right day. That matchup's still a trouble for her. I'd still predict Iga to win whenever they play, more or less, apart from on a really fast court. Then it's a bit more even. But she's 1-1 with Sabalenka in matches she was right up in her face with. And there's no data on Rybakina because they haven't played for nearly 2 years.
Exactly.
But I fully believe that she would compete with Rybakina.
Yeah.
I can imagine her running down everything Rybakina throws at her and her frustrating, and Coco frustrating Elena in the same way as Coco frustrates Serena.
Yes.
She just brings something different to the mix. And the reality is that this is something I'm probably going to write an article about. I had a look at the stats. So since Coco kind of got Brad Gilbert on her team, and sort of, so we're talking start of the US hardcourt season after Wimbledon, since that time, if you look at the top four and their results, only Iga has won more and lost fewer than Goff.
That's quite a stat.
Yeah.
That is worth writing about, yeah.
So yeah, Iga's won 46. She's 46 for six since Wimbledon.
Right.
Coco's 40 for eight. Coco's 40 for eight.
Yeah.
And then Elena and Arena are actually really similar. They're like 28, 27 for nine.
Right. That's quite a big jump as well.
Yeah.
From Coco to Sabalenka and Elena.
Yeah. So she's def. So yeah, I will always put her as in the mix for titles with those, with the other four. I think she set herself apart from the rest of the field. And yeah, that's where I'm at. We have a top four, not top three in a bit.
I agree. I think it's, I think with how she's playing at the moment, yeah, she might lose sometimes, but so does Sabalenka, so does Ragnar, so does Świątek. And I think just because some of her matches are a little bit more scrappy doesn't mean, like you've said with your stats, that she's not winning. So
She's winning a lot.
She's winning a lot, actually. Even if she's making it hard, she's winning a lot.
Doha was a blip.
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where that's the state of the WTA. So like usually WTA weekly after a big event, we'll check in on the state of the top four for as long as they are the top four.
Yes.
Till the landscape shifts again, which it will. Yeah. Speaking of the top four, we're not going to do a health check on Rybakina because we don't have her medical records. And we probably shouldn't.
No, I didn't know.
And Arina Sabalenka. So far this year, I mean, like, I just gave Sabalenka stats since Wimbledon, which has included a Grand Slam final, a Grand Slam title. But apart from the Grand Slam title, it's been a final in Brisbane, early exit in Dubai to Vekic, and fourth round exit to Navarro in Indian Wells, which we commentated on.
Yes, we did.
Where are you at with Sabalenka as of this moment? I don't think we should be... Yeah, as of right now, are we talking alarm bells for the year or is it just a rough patch?
I'm seeing rough patch, personally. I don't put alarm bells on the year. I think she'll come back really strong in Miami, would be my prediction. I think she's struggled since the Australian Open. Yes, obviously some poor results, but like you said, I think blip is the right word for this. It feels like a blip. It feels like, you know, the matches she's lost haven't been total walkovers. She doesn't look, you know, terrible. I don't think in the matches I've seen her in, she just looks sort of inconsistent and not quite at her best. I don't see that changing. I see that changing quite quickly. I don't think that necessarily means we're going to see her win Miami, but I think we'll see her get a lot further than Indian Wells.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think she's just searching for a sweet spot at the minute. Mm. But like you're saying, the level isn't terrible. It's just inconsistent. And that's Arena when she's off her game.
Yeah.
It's just how she is. So I wouldn't be, if I was on a Sabalenka team, I wouldn't be pressing the panic button yet. And Miami might suit her a little bit better.
I think it will. Yeah, I'm not necessarily choosing her for the title, but I do think we'll see a stronger Sabalenka this coming week.
Before we move on to Miami, quick word on Emma Navarro, who was the other kind of story of Indian Wells. Quarterfinals, top 20 ranked.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of consistency against someone else who gets the wins. Big result against Sabalenka. Is Emma Navarro officially one to watch, or has she already been that for a while?
I think she's obviously been one to keep an eye on, and now I think she's one to watch. I would specifically, I think we both said before when we commentated on her match against Sabalenka, was it?
Yeah.
That we hadn't necessarily fully watched her play before. I certainly hadn't. Or at least a full match of hers. But I'd obviously seen how well she'd been doing this year. I'd seen her name in getting far in tournaments. I think this sort of week for her was a real statement. Yes, she lost to Sakkari. I think she fought hard in that. And Sakkari did too. It was a good match. I think Sakkari came out on top, but Navarro played well. I think she'll be a factor in Miami. I think she'll be a factor going forward. And I think she's probably still getting better, which is what really makes me interested to see her development.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, she's definitely here to compete. And yeah, she makes it a good match with top players. So deserving of a top 20 spot.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what else she does, including in Segway, Miami.
Miami.
Yeah, well, I think the big story of the Miami draw, before we even get into digging into how we think it's all going to go and things like that, we did a little bit with Świątek. Maybe a little bit when we talk about Sakkari. The return of Simona Halep.
Indeed. I felt like it needed a dun dun dun.
I was like, do I do that? No, that's going to be too easy.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it.
Simona Halep is back. Is that good for tennis?
I think so. I definitely think so. I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of everything that's gone on with Simona Halep in the last few years. But what I would say is that I'm really looking forward to seeing her play tennis again. And especially the fuel that I think this is going to give her could actually be really interesting to see. If she's been, you know, keeping up her level over the last couple of years in private, we've not seen it. But if she's been continuing to practice, yes, she might not be match fit, but I think she could have a real sort of fire under her to really come back and make a statement.
I think match fit is definitely very different to physically fit. There's no doubt she's still physically fit, but there's that, again, match wins matter, and she's going to be match rusty when she comes in. Yeah, I think it remains to be seen. I think I know that, yeah, there are some people who are very not happy that Simona Halep is back, very ready to believe that what happened was deliberate.
Yes.
It's one of those things that you've got to trust the systems basically said what she did was she served the punishment for what she did. There we go. That was she served the time. She's back on court. She doesn't have a lot left of her career anyway. She's now mid-30s, right? Yeah, she's not exactly. Yeah, well, she's 33 now, nearly.
I think so. I think I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's something like that. Quick Google.
I think she's nearly 33.
Yeah, that's one I think. I'm sure she was born in 91. Yeah, she was September 91. So she's 32 at the minute. She'll be 33 So yeah, she's kind of. She'll probably be able to compete. Look at Kvitova, at Azarenka. The question is how long?
Yeah.
I mean, with her game, her athleticism, she'd certainly be able to keep up with the others, but I'm expecting it to be a bit match fit. But if she's on her game, then yes, she'll be a great addition to the tennis mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And not necessarily, I don't mean necessarily that I think she's going to do really well in Miami. But I mean, if we're looking more widely at the rest of the season, her coming back, I think as she slowly gains match fitness, you never know if she could become a factor again. She's got the mentality, she's got the physical fitness, she's got the athleticism, like you say. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for her to come back and do really well.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, is it likely she's playing? Obviously, she's drawn to play Badosa in that opening round. I'm skeptical that's going to be the opening round opponent that she faces.
I am too. I don't think she'll be playing Paola, personally. So I don't think we should get too excited about that matchup because I'm not sure it'll happen. Hit my desk. I am hoping. I mean, I'm hoping she can get through whatever first round opponent she has because I would love to see her play Sabalenka.
That's going to be fun.
It'd be so fun. Whatever the outcome, she might not be anywhere near match fit enough to play Sabalenka, but I think it'd be fun either way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think she'd be up for it. It's like, right, okay, here's where we are kind of out the gate.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're seeing the first round on the screen now. Any other first round matches that caught your eye, by the way, from the draw?
Right in the centre there. Stevens Kerber for me.
The obvious one, yeah.
It is quite, I know, but it's right there in the middle. I can't not say it. It is obvious. And I'm a big fan of Kerber's comeback. I know it's been a little bit stop-start, maybe a bit slow for some people, but I quite like the sort of slow edging back into form that I think Kerber's been doing. But Stevens, I think, is playing some good tennis right now, so I think that's a really fun one. What about yours?
Battle of the Slam champions. Yeah. For sure. And yeah, same for me. I think that one by a mile. There's some intriguing ones, don't get me wrong. But in terms of big name clashes, it's Stevens Kerber that kind of dominates. I'd give Angie the slight edge in that one. She did really well in Indian Wells.
I agree. I'd pick Kerber for that.
Kirit is picking Raducanu versus Wang Zhu, which actually is an interesting match.
Yeah.
That one could go either way.
Absolutely. Depends.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say, depends which sort of Wang Zhu shows up. Obviously, she lost in the first round at Indian Wells to Burrell, I believe. But she was in a final a couple of weeks before that of a 250. If she brings that sort of level, you never know. Raducanu, I thought, looked really good against Sabalenka. If she brings that sort of level, it could be a really good match.
Here we go. Yeah, so I agree. And also, it does depend on the level, as you say, the level Raducanu brings. You know, saying it depends which one shows up. It also depends which Raducanu shows up.
Yes.
To a certain extent. Where are you at with Emma right now?
I am enjoying her sort of return to a sort of solid or more solid level of tennis. And I think that's what we should hope for her this year. For me, I just want to see her playing a sort of solid level, relatively consistent. I don't need to see her go on these ridiculous runs. I don't think that's where she is in her career right now. For me personally, you know, I don't see her getting to latter stages of draws or anything like that. But if she can have some good results across the year, then I think a good year for Raducanu doesn't necessarily mean any titles or even finals. It just sort of means staying consistent, staying healthy, and trying to improve.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Consistency is key, because that's the thing that she's been lacking a little bit of since she won the US Open. And I think building consistency is going to be, regardless of anything else, it's going to build a little bit more belief.
Yeah.
And she can do it. She can do it. And we're starting to see the seeds of it. So I guess we're going to see how far she can kind of get.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what ranking she'd be looking at. Seeded by the US Open seems ambitious to me.
That does seem a little bit ambitious to me as well. I don't know whether, I'm sure she will be. She'll have a target in mind. For me, I don't know whether ranking should matter to her as much this year as, like we said, consistency and staying healthy and playing tournaments.
I think getting back top 100 would be a good target.
That would be, yeah, maybe more realistic.
No, yeah, and also, like, then she's legitimately kind of on the tour.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, and apparently she's 62nd in the race so far, so good opportunity.
Yeah, to sort of, I think even if she doesn't move too much either way, obviously it'd be great if she does, but even if she doesn't move too much either way, I think just that sort of staying steady would be a good progression for her after so much turmoil in the last few years.
So this is the latest Raducanu roundup. We will probably be revisiting Raducanu at some point, trying to find all the alliterations I possibly can. Another player that's kind of high profile comeback, Naomi Osaka.
Yes.
Where are we at with her at the minute? Good start in Indian Wells.
Yep.
Fizzled out a little bit.
Yeah.
Where are we at with her going into Miami?
I'm a big Osaka fan. I really, really like Osaka. I like her tennis. I like her big hitting. For me, I watched her matches at Indian Wells because I'm a fan. So I did watch them. I thought she fell to an Elise Mertens who was playing some really, really good stuff. So yeah, Osaka wasn't on her game, but I did think Mertens did well in that match.
You're probably wondering why Mertens played like that against Osaka and then did not do that against Goff.
Not even a little bit. I was so shocked. After that match with Osaka, I thought, wow, Mertens could really have a little go at Goff. No, not at all. Completely, completely different level in both of those matches. But for me at the moment, Osaka's tennis is, she's going for those big hitting. It's really high risk tennis, especially for someone who's not necessarily super match fit, has taken a long time off the tour. And that high risk at the moment doesn't seem to me to be always worth the reward she's getting from it. You sort of wonder, and I think other people have been suggesting it as well, whether if she took 10%, 20% off her shots, would she find some more consistency? Does she need to absolutely go for every single shot, every single time? Or does she need to sort of back off a little bit, become more confident, and then build up to the level we know she has inside her?
I guess only she knows. Look, she looks comfortable, so that's just let her do her thing, is what I say.
Yeah, that's true. If she wants to, yeah, absolutely. If she wants to keep playing the high-risk tennis, I do think it will pay off eventually. It's just maybe going to take her longer.
Please give us an Osaka-Ostapenko match.
I would love it. I would love it. She's got a really tough draw in Miami. I don't know if you've looked at
Osaka's.
Osaka's draw, sort of going forward.
She's got a Cotsureta round one. Who's round two?
Svitolina.
Yeah. But then Svitolina's a bit patchy right now since the injury.
That's true.
Winnable, but tough.
But tough. And then it would be Cara Garcia in the third if she was able to get past that.
Again, that depends on which Garcia shows up.
Exactly. They've already played, is it twice this?
Yes. Season? Oh, yeah, of course they have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go again.
One apiece, I think. So
yeah, yeah.
That would be a really interesting third round if Osaka can make it that far.
Yeah, that would be well noteworthy. I'd try and catch that, although it depends on when they schedule it, obviously.
Yes.
Sleep is important, people. Don't break yourselves trying to stay up for tennis.
Miami's slightly better than Indian Wells for that, for us.
Slightly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Generally, you're probably only missing night sessions.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the only other player I think I wanted to highlight before kind of a sort of more general draw question would be, I know we said that we couldn't really give an update sort of post-Indian Wells on Rybakina, but what expectations do we have for Elena Rybakina going into this tournament?
It's so difficult when you don't know how she's doing health-wise. I know that she was seen sort of doing some practicing in Indian Wells even by the end of the tournament. So she seemed better. I saw some pictures of her sort of looking better. But I think I'd struggle to have her going to latter stages when she's been sort of in and out due to her the illness that seems to be struggling with. I definitely think, you know, she can always make it a few rounds, but whether she can really push on to the latter stages, I'm not sure.
Which then, of course, gives hope to the others in her section. And I'm looking at Ostapenko and Sakkari as the other two big seeds in that section.
Definitely.
Probably.
I think Sakkari should especially take some...
Is that Sakkari?
From that.
Is it Sakkari in that section? Yeah, she's in that section, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Potential quarterfinal opponent if the seeds kind of fall as they should. Which they never do.
Never.
Speaking of seeds falling, do we have a... Who's... I'll get that in a minute. Someone's trying to ring me. Go away. I'm on a phone call. I'm on a live stream. Do you see any... potential threats to the top four in the potential threats to the top four in this draw from making the semi-finals. Let's take Rebecca out of it because we're not sure about her level.
Yeah.
Likely threats for them.
Threats. I think Ostapenko, if she can find the level that she was bringing at the beginning of the year, and also just in general, she's always a threat. I think when you step on the court with Ostapenko, you should always be a tiny bit intimidated. But yeah, I think she could definitely have a say in that.
Okay. Brilliant. I think Ostapenko always has to be in the mix for any tennis discussion, really, because when she brings it, she brings it.
Doesn't she ever?
Yeah. And she's a former Miami finalist as well.
Yes, of course.
A while back, but yeah, I think she lost to Stevens.
Yeah, so she's got previous.
Well, I think that's an adequate preview of Miami and roundup from Indian Wells, and bang on an hour, which is great because we usually run over. So perfect. Thank you so much, Kira, for coming on. This was fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fantastic. Well, look, if you are new, please like and subscribe to the video. We will be bringing you lots of Miami coverage throughout the tournament, lots of behind the scenes stuff going on, press conference, press presence, and obviously plenty of live streams coming as well. And obviously, if you haven't checked out ATP Weekly yet, that went out this afternoon. Go back and watch that. We'll be back in 2 weeks to round up everything Miami for WTA Weekly. And I'm looking forward to seeing all the great tennis that's going to unfold on this absolutely brilliant tour. So thanks, everyone, for joining. Until then, take care and keep talking tennis.
If you enjoyed this video, make sure you hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and click that notification bell so you don't miss out on all things tennis.
Sports Social Podcast Network.